It seems like you've started the party without me. Haven't you heard? She gave me her flattest stare. I am the party. Laughing, I went to shed my coat and shoes. When I came back, she was standing by the fridge and tearing the foil away from another bottle of champagne, with her teeth. As ever, I was mildly qualmish about taking advantage of Caspian's largesse or whatever. But technically, Ellery was the one taking advantage. And I really did have something to celebrate. Pulling herself onto the edge of one of the gleaming marble counters, she popped the cork with upper-class ease. Foam surged upward, splashing onto the floor and running down her hand. I would have been squeaking and flailing for a cloth, but she only laughed and licked the champagne from her arm, spilling even more as the gesture tilted the bottle downward. Mustering some of her insouciance, I skirted the puddles of champagne and hopped onto the counter next to her. She nudged my knee with hers and passed me the bottle. I'm happy for you. Thanks, I squeaked. Didn't choke myself this time, and kicked her gently back. Is this what you want to do? With your life, or whatever? Yes. I mean, ideally at some point in a less tea-making, better-paying capacity. But this is a super-exciting start. Cool. We passed the bottle back and forth for a while. Ellery, though, seemed restless, her heels catching against the cabinets below. Are you okay? I asked. She shrugged, and then, after an uncomfortably long pause, just thinking about shit. I was quite busy dying for a while, and then I had to not die. Now, I guess I have to do something else. Well, is there anything you like? I like dying. I was into that. Her mouth curled into a rare smile. Good at it, too. I reached out and ran my thumb across the bumpy, wrong-way scar on her wrist. I'd say you were mediocre at best. And she threw back her head and laughed the rough, throaty laugh that reminded me so much of Caspian. Not so much the sound of it, but the way it tore itself free. Like a butterfly from a cocoon. It made me want to hug the shit out of both of them. So, how about, I said instead, we back-burner suicide for the time being. She rolled her eyes. If you insist. Is there anything else you enjoy? Coke. Seems to me you'd make a very successful investment banker. No. She took another swallow of champagne. My dick's too big. Now it was my turn to giggle. Speaking from experience. City types are always the same. Fat bonus, tiny prick. Lawyers are even worse. I've only slept with proto-lawyers. My mind produced a hazy semi-pornographic montage of everyone I bonked at university who I vaguely remembered as having been studying law. They seemed fine. Maybe they shrivel away over time or something. Consumed from within by their own pedantry. Yeah. Ellery lifted the bottle in a toast of disdain. Pompous wankers. Her contempt, which usually hummed along at a certain comfortable baseline, had spiked noticeably. You really don't like lawyers, huh? Probably Caspian just hires the biggest twats he can find. I don't know. Okay. So, I made a valiant effort to redirect the conversation. Putting aside Class A narcotics. Cocaine isn't a narcotic. That's a pharmacologically erroneous legal classification. Thanks, Walter White. I told you lawyers were bullshit. I wrestled my face into its most patient expression. Is there anything else that makes you feel even a little bit like you don't want to die? She huffed out a long, aggrieved sigh, and then mumbled something. What?
Music. Music's okay.
What about that, then? I mean, there's university, or, like, music school. Shit. I was out of my depth, and it earned me a scowl.
No. I hate music like that.
Like what?
In a cage.
She gulped down the last of the champagne, jumped off the counter and pulled open the fridge, glanced over at me and grinned, feral and bright, with the light shining on her face.
Another.
My memories of the rest of the evening got all bubbly. Ellery lay under the table and talked about Bartok a lot, about exile and the preservation of Hungarian folk songs. And I pitched articles to her, my ideas flowing as bounteously as the booze, though significantly poorer in quality. At some point we might have done the full Titanic pose on the balcony with me shouting that I was king of the world to the slumbering city below. And we'd hooked my phone up to the sound system and danced and danced and danced until the stars blurred. And Ellery looked almost happy. Chapter 24. Oh, God. I was dying. I peeled open an eyelid and immediately regretted it. Light lanced straight through my skull. What? What had happened to me? Had I been attacked? Hang on. No. I'd spent the evening with Ellery. And now I was broken. Probably the best thing to do was lie very still and pretend I didn't exist. Yep, that would work. The sound of a door opening and closing thundered across my senses like a stampede of raging wildebeest. Must have been the cleaners. Twitching my fingers in the direction of the pillow, I mashed it protectively against my face.
Arden?
Wait, that was Caspian's voice. I partially self-excavated, forced my eyes to work, then my brain. There was a human shape in the doorway. And, yup, it was definitely him. Not a hallucination, but a vision, nonetheless, in a chocolate-brown pinstriped suit and a paisley tie, that made him look like something from a Jazz Age daydream.
Good God,
he said, way too loudly, his voice echoing through the spaces surrounding my wizened, dehydrated brain.
Are you ill?
I whimpered. No, but I wasn't expecting you until tomorrow. Unless it's already tomorrow. Is it tomorrow now?
I came back early. I wanted to see you.
The bright blur bobbing about in front of him resolved itself into a bouquet of tulips. And not the fancy kind, either. The kind you got from a stall. Just some flowers tied up with paper and string.
I texted. I didn't realize you hadn't received it.
I'm barely receiving oxygen right now, but I'm always happy to see you. His free hand came up in a gesture that didn't seem to be anything at all, and then dropped back to his side.
This was ill-conceived. I don't know what I was... That is... I'll come back when we agreed. I'm sorry.
I tried to croak out something to stop him. But then Ellery, who, given the vastness of both the bed and my hangover, I'd failed to notice had been sleeping beside me, poked her head up and drawled, "Well, isn't this sweet?" Caspian went white. It was awful to watch. Like when somebody gets shot in a movie and there's this silence, and then suddenly blood everywhere. The tulips slipped from his hand and scattered at his feet. Rainbow shrapnel. And then he turned and... Fuck! I dived off the bed, relieved to discover I was in boxers. And a sock. For a moment I thought I was going to throw up, but I couldn't tell if it was physical or mental distress. Or a little bit of both. Thankfully, the churning in my stomach and the spinning in my head briefly balanced each other out, and I managed to stagger after Caspian. He was almost gone, and I just knew I couldn't let him step out the door. Because while I had no doubt he'd come to his senses, I might never forgive him. For someone so committed to seeing the best in me, it didn't take much for him to assume the absolute fucking worst. "Don't!" I cried. "Wait!" And because I had no idea what else to do, I flung myself at him. It was probably the least dignified thing I'd ever done, which, you know, talk about stiff competition. As I moved, I caught sight of my shadow on the wall, outstretched arms doing the full 1922 Nosferatu death scene. But somehow I managed to get them wrapped around Caspian's waist, my cheek to his unyielding back, and there I clung. He stopped. I guess he had to, or look as ridiculous as me.
"Let me go."
"What the fuck are you doing?"
"You were in bed with my sister."
"I'm cuddly, Caspian. I like to sleep with people. I mean, literally sleep with them. Not have sex with them." He didn't move. Just stood there, sucking the heat and hope out of me like an ice sculpture of a man who thought I'd fucked his sister. "Oh, come on!" I squeezed him desperately. "Use that magnificent brain of yours. Putting aside the fact that I would be mad to want anyone else while I have you, do you really think I'd be stupid enough to cheat on you in your own house? Knowing you could turn up at any moment? Is that it? Do you think I'm stupid?" His hand crept up and covered mine. His fingers were cold and trembled slightly.
"I don't understand why you'd... why you'd..."
Given Caspian's own discomfort with physical intimacy, it did make a terrible sort of sense that he couldn't imagine sharing a bed with somebody without dicking them. But while that helped me understand a bit more about what was going on, it didn't make me feel any better about it. "Why do you do this to me?" I wailed. "I've given you no reason to doubt my faith or my virtue." Oh, God, now I was in a Victorian sensation novel. I was probably about to discover I was my own twin brother who had been confined to a lunatic asylum. "And with your sister, for God's sake. What the fuck is wrong with you?" Of course, Ellery would choose exactly this moment to come out of the bedroom. She was wearing my Calipigian T-shirt, a pair of cat head thigh highs, and a death glare. And I wanted to strongly encourage her to go away, but unfortunately she spoke before I could. "I'll tell you what's wrong with him. He thinks everyone's like he is." Caspian spun around so fast its centrifugal forced me away from him and sent me crashing to the floor.
"What?" he asked with hideous calm. "Is that supposed to mean?"
"You don't value friendship, so you don't understand why anyone would." This was definitely one of those stay-down situations. I huddled, wishing I had a helmet or something. "The thing is, Caspian," Ellery's lip curled with a frankly spectacular degree of scorn, "while fucking you up is one of the few things I really enjoy, I like Arden, and I don't want to fuck him up as well." Caspian sighed.
"You're being childish, Eleanor."
"I'm not the one freaking out because he thought someone else was playing with his toys."
You have no right to interfere in my affairs or embroil Arden in your attention-seeking dramas. He is my partner. He is not your friend.
He's also right here, I said. And I'm seriously not enjoying being the stick you use to beat each other.
There was a brief, profoundly awkward pause.
And then Caspian extended a hand to help me off the ground.
I apologize for my sister's behavior. She's been impossible for years, and I have no idea what makes her act like this.
My mouth dropped open. Caspian didn't so much end arguments as nuke them from orbit. I really didn't want to take sides here, but he was crossing an unacceptable dick threshold. It's you! Ellery wasn't breathing well enough to be yelling. Her voice sounded genuinely broken, caught somewhere between tears and screaming. You made me act like this! You made me invisible! You've made me worthless! You've taken away everyone who's ever cared about me! Dad, Mum, Lancaster, Nathaniel, even your fucking self! If we were in a movie, this would have been the moment that changed everything. They'd hug and cry and lay their feelings bare and promise to be better people, and a Sam Smith song would play and everyone would go home all uplifted and shit. Except we weren't in a movie. And what Caspian said was,
I'm not having this conversation with you.
Ellery stared at him, with eyes that were so like his and so not. And then she turned and walked back into the bedroom, emerging about 30 seconds later with her boots on and her bag over her shoulder. She was gone, without another word, leaving us standing in the middle of this emotional crater. At least, I was standing in an emotional crater. I had no idea what was going on with Caspian. My voice floated out of me like a confused poltergeist. I don't think I can be here right now.
Get dressed. I'll take you out.
No. Thank you. I need to, I made a helpless gesture. Be by myself for a bit. I might go for a swim. Caspian had become a stranger, regarding me considerately.
I see. Would you like me to wait?
Would you like to? Or maybe we had both become strangers, marooned on islands of courtesy.
I'll wait.
I dug out my towel and a dressing gown and changed into my trunks. Drank about 1 million gallons of water, grabbed my phone, and got the hell out of the apartment. Say this for complete psychological devastation. It really put a hangover in perspective. The pool was serene as ever, the silvery light soothing my gritty eyes. Slumping down onto one of the fancy lounger things, I rang Ellery. No answer. Of course not. I rang again, and again, and again, until, at last, she answered. Hi, Mum. No, it's me, oh, wait, I see what you did there. Are you okay? I could almost hear her shrugging. Sure. You know, I'm your friend. Right. I know you're my friend with terrible taste in men. And you're... okay? I faffed miserably with my towel. You promise? Yeah, Arden. I double pinky swear, and for the record, you're being super weird. I just... I don't know. I was afraid you might be... I don't want you to... What? My mouth formed a series of useless shapes, and then I blurted out,
kill yourself. A long silence. Because of Caspian? Because of anything. She laughed. Like he'd even care. Talk soon. And then she hung up. I stared helplessly at my phone for a moment or two. Well, at least she was talking to me. And not, dead. Sigh. Sigh forever. Dragging off the dressing gown and leaving everything on the lounger, I plopped gingerly into the water. Only discovering how numbed through I was when I heard my own splash before I felt the lap of heat against my skin. And that was my body. Fuck knew what was going on in my brain. I swam a few lengths as vigorously as I could, given my general weediness, thrashing up and down the pool like a stressed-out basking shark. Not that I had my mouth wide open or anything, on account of preferring not to drown. But if it had been possible to wear my emotional state on my face, that would have been me. Frozen in an epic, oh, fuck. Moving helped. Turned the volume up somehow. Though eventually I just flipped onto my back and floated listlessly. I knew this wasn't my shit. That it wasn't about me and didn't involve me. But God, it was hard to watch. And it made me a traitor, whatever happened. A bad friend or a bad... Oh. Caspian had called me his partner. Which would have made me so happy if he hadn't only done it to hurt someone else. Or maybe he thought he was protecting what was his from a perceived incursion. And... Wow, was that a recipe for all the ambiguous feelings? Because I loved thinking of myself as Caspian's. I wanted to be claimed and possessed and treasured by him. But in this particular context, when it wasn't about me or us at all, it was icky. It was icky as fuck. I lost track of how long I drifted in the water. I wasn't even sure if Caspian would still be there when I went back. Or how I'd face him. What I'd say. If, for that matter, there was anything to say. I mean, I knew full well that he could be like this. And also that it wasn't a true reflection of who he was. Apparently, some families could really bring out the worst in each other. It made me extra glad for mine. Of course, plenty of people thought we had a pretty weird setup. And in all fairness, I could see that. Considering Mum and I were hiding from my dad with her girlfriend and her girlfriend's husband in a majorly remote part of Scotland. But while nearly everyone I knew spoke about loving their folks as a duty they were resigned to, I actually liked mine. And I was starting to think that was a very special thing. Back in the apartment, I found Caspian sitting on the sofa in the living area, his face turned toward the window and his body thrown into silhouette against the gleaming afternoon. It reminded me of the time I'd come down to London to yell at him. Before then, I'd only seen him amid Oxford's gold. But this was his world. High windows and horizons. And later, once I'd got past the anger and the crying and the being kissed and being rejected, I thought about how alone he'd looked. An untouchable prince, caged by his own power. Well, he wasn't alone now. I padded across the room and dropped to my knees beside him. A gesture not of submissiveness, but of offered closeness. Arden. His hand moved, then stilled. I smiled up at him, and very gently nudged his thigh with my cheek. Hey.
I owe you an apology.
For whose behavior?
He had the grace to blush a little.
Mine.
Silence. More silence. I'm kind of waiting for it here, I said. At last he touched me, his fingers gathering a few drops of water from the tips of my hair.
I'm sorry. I've been...
He looked like he was struggling, so I got helpful. A complete dick.
That seems a fair description.
He went all quiet again for a second or two.
And I hope you know that I don't doubt you.
You say that, but you're super quick to think I've banged your sister. He put his hand to his eyes, shielding even more of his expression from me, as if being in profile and tight-lipped just wasn't remote enough.
I was jealous.
Of me and Ellery? There's nothing to be jealous of.
Of course there is. I'm jealous of how close you are. Of the intimacy you have.
All relationships are their own thing. I pressed against his leg again, until his fingers curled through my still damp hair. We have our own intimacies.
But I may never be as easy with you as she is. I may never be able to give you that.
Do you want to? After a moment, he gave a swift, sharp nod. Then that's enough for me. I caught his wrist and bestowed a fleeting kiss upon his palm. But you have to do better with Ellery. Okay. He pulled away slightly.
I'm not sure I know how to.
Oh, come on, Caspian. I sat back on my heels. You're not a robot or a monster. You know what you did and why it was awful. And I get you were upset, but that's no excuse.
Eleanor is different with you. She never responds well to me.
That doesn't mean you get to be, like, almost willfully nasty to her. He sighed.
I have spent my life hurting my sister. I don't think either of us is prepared for that to change now.
I think maybe you're not prepared.
Shouting at me about all the damage I've caused is hardly an effective way to open a dialogue.
Actually, it could be. You're the one who's refusing to listen.
Arden, you know what kind of man I am. You've always known.
Yes. I gazed at him steadily. I do. I know how kind you are, for a start. And I know you don't treat people badly. So why Ellery? It's almost like you don't want to fix things, like you're trying to keep her at a distance. Why do you want your sister to hate you, Caspian?
Come here, my little journalist.
He reached down and pulled me into his lap. Kissed me hard enough to make my head spin.
Always looking for an angle or a story.
You're trying to distract me. He pushed a hand under the dressing gown and stroked my thigh until I got the shivers.
There is no try. Do or do not.
O.M.G. You are the dorkiest. He kissed me again and I felt his smile against my lips. But I know what you're at.
Maybe. But I came here for you, not to talk about my sister.
And still at. His expression was serious as he met my eyes.
Would it really be so terrible, Arden, to let me? I understand you care about Ellery, but she's not the only person who's been hurt today. And this is certainly not the afternoon I envisioned for us. With your consent, I would very much like to salvage it and celebrate your latest accomplishment.
I wanted to say yes. And Caspian was certainly doing everything in his power to make it super tempting. Except I couldn't. I just couldn't. It would have meant accepting things that I was no longer comfortable accepting. Not after everything that had happened between us. I shook my head. I gave him a little push, knowing how responsive he was to that sort of thing. Sure enough, he let me go at once. Gazed at me in obvious dismay. I'm sorry. The thing is, I can't keep ignoring how much you keep from me.
My relationship with my sister has nothing to do with you.
I know! But, I swiveled sideways on the sofa so I could see him better, even if it was his profile. I have something to do with you, don't I?
Of course you do. But there are simply some things I don't wish to talk about. Surely you can respect that.
Great. Now I looked totally unreasonable. If the carnage with Ellery had showed me anything, it was that Caspian was good at winning arguments. Maybe because he saw them as something that could be won. Or perhaps had to be. Yes, I said. I can't make you tell me stuff. And I wouldn't want to. I just wish you felt like you could. He sneered with Ellery-like contempt.
One of the many toxic facets of modern psychology is the way it teaches us that sharing is inherently beneficial. When often it is selfish, hurtful, or otherwise self-indulgent.
Okay, but if you told me about the nature of your relationship with Nathaniel, then I wouldn't have pushed you so hard over the room, and probably... he wouldn't thank me for mentioning what happened that night. I wouldn't have made you feel so bad.
Well, if you hadn't been so determined to pry, then the whole situation would not have occurred in the first place.
Yep, this was definitely verbal Carcassonne. And I was definitely losing. And there was nothing I could do about it, short of running out of the castle and being attacked by wolves, necessitating a rescue from Caspian that would lead to us eating soup together and playing in the snow, and then he'd give me a library and... Wait, that was something else. I tried a different tack. Look, you told Ellery I was your partner because you wanted to hurt her. Not because it's how you see me or how you treat me. That's really fucked up.
I'm trying, Arden.
And maybe I was better at Carcassonne than I thought, because he sounded genuinely shaken.
I want to be a partner to you. I want to make you happy. But at some point you're going to have to accept that this is who I am.
No, it's who you say you are. That's not the same thing. He turned sharply.
What do you mean?
You're not asking me to accept you as you are. You're asking me to accept the way you see yourself, which I can't do. I had to curl my hands in my lap to stop reaching out to him. Because that's not how I see you. Caspian surged off the sofa, obviously frustrated.
I'm sorry, Arden, but how many times must we have this conversation? Reach this same impasse. You're looking for something that isn't there. You must understand and ultimately decide for yourself if this... If I... can be enough for you.
Wow. What? No. How had we got here? I stared at him in horror. You can't just dump the whole responsibility for our future on me. There's two of us involved here.
Yes, but I'm not the one who's unhappy.
It was his gentlest voice. The voice that often cut me the deepest.
I'm doing my best. But I'm tired of disappointing you, Arden.
"You don't," I cried. "You aren't. All I'm asking
is for things I can't give."
There was a long, nasty silence.
"I should go,"
said Caspian finally.
"You need time to think. Text me if you still want to be my date tomorrow."
I was too stunned to even try and stop him.
Chapter 25. Saturday dawned, shittily. I hadn't slept well, and I'd done exactly zero preparation for the phenomenally posh birthday party I would have to attend, whether I went with Caspian or not. Ugh, Caspian. What had I done? I mean, maybe he was right. Maybe I was asking for the impossible. He told me about Nathaniel. He trusted me with his nightmare. It wasn't my job to fix his relationship with Ellery. It wasn't even my business. Back in Kinloch Bearvy, he'd promised to try. And I'd promised to be patient. And only one of us, really, could be said to have kept up their side of the bargain. Clue, it wasn't me. I'd been greedy and pushy and demanding. And not very kind. And Caspian had stuck with me, supported me, done so much for me, both practically and emotionally. And in return, I'd made him feel like a failure. Like he couldn't make me happy. When he did, he so did. Obviously, what we had together wasn't perfect. But what was? I didn't know how to do relationships, and I was starting to get the sense he didn't either. But we were trying. Faltering and fucking up. But definitely trying. Well, except for the bit where I told him that wasn't good enough. And what did I want when it came down to it? A fairy tale. A happily ever after as smooth as glass. Or something real and messy and occasionally painful. With the complicated, damaged, fascinating man I was pretty sure I was falling in love with. I groped for my phone and texted Caspian. "I'm sorry. You couldn't disappoint me if you tried. Please pick me up. I would love to be your date for the party." As ever, Caspian's reply came quickly.
"I think you've forgotten that I am capable of accomplishing almost anything to which I bend my attention. I could disappoint you comprehensively if I so desired."
I didn't deserve to be joked at, but I laughed and felt better. Accepting Caspian's comfort because he'd offered it and I needed it. Still had to deal with the damn party, though. In the end, I googled the closest branch of Moss Brothers and forked out £50 to hire a tux and all the fittings. Of course, everyone else was probably going to be in bespoke designer shit, but at least I was in the vicinity of appropriate. I didn't have a mask either. But anything in my budget wasn't going to work for an event like that. Basically, I'd be Kaylee in that episode of Firefly where she goes to a party in the best pink dress in the verse, but everyone is all sneery because it's off the rack instead of custom-made by poor people. Then as I was sloping moodily home past the Mac concession on the ground floor of Debenhams, I had a eureka moment. I didn't need to buy a mask at all. I could use makeup. That way it could be as extravagant and unique as I wanted, and people would go, "Oh, isn't he arty?" rather than, "Oh, isn't he cheap?" I stocked up and raced back to the flat. It took a bit of practice, some diligent eyebrow shaping, and most of what was left of my afternoon. But I was pleased with how it turned out. I'd managed to give myself butterfly wings, dark pink at the inside corners of my eyes,
blending into blue and yellow and pearly green as the design unfurled across my cheeks and brow. The colours seemed especially vivid against the austerity of my hired formal wear, and I felt, honestly, a little bit magical. Needless to say, I did what anyone would have done under the circumstances, and I selfied the living fuck out of myself, and was therefore so late that Caspian had to come up and get me.
"Did you change your mind?"
he asked, stepping softly in the living area.
"Are you all right?"
I yelped, nearly dropping my phone. "No, I mean, yes, I mean, I haven't changed my mind, sorry."
"What are you doing?"
As it happened, what I was doing was working a MySpace angle, but there was no way I was admitting that. I lowered my arm, sheepishly. "Just, trying to get a signal."
"Clearly."
He sounded very dry.
"I sent you 3 texts.
"God, sorry." This was the problem with having 2 phones. It was double the opportunity to miss things. Closing Instagram down, I turned hastily and... "Wow. Oh, wow. Caspian." He was immaculate in full black tie. Effortless, too. Nothing imprecise or overdone. Just fiercely fine tailoring and the subtle sheen of matte silk from the reverse and buttons of his classic one-button peak lapel jacket. His mask was a single strip of black satin that I could already tell would make everyone else look too ornate and tacky by comparison. And it seemed so completely miraculous right then that this man, so steeped in wealth and power, who could have anything in the world he wanted, wanted me. My heart twisted itself into a knot so tight and tender I could hardly breathe. Then he crossed the room and drew me into his arms, turned my face up to his and gazed at me in a manner I'm sure Jane Austen would have described as ardent.
"You're enchanting,"
he said.
"I want to kiss you, but I'm afraid I'll smudge it."
I was good to take the risk, but words weren't working so well. Despite the fact that a couple of minutes ago I'd been fearlessly broadcasting how hot I looked to the whole internet, his compliment had flustered me, and was probably undoing all my hard work because I hadn't factored being bright red into my mask design.
"This will have to suffice for now."
He caught my hand, drew it up to his lips and kissed my knuckles. All soft and gallant and unexpectedly sweet. I just about swooned. "How about we ditch the party?"
"I don't think Eleanor would ever forgive you."
It was the only time he'd ever spoken of her in a way that suggested he had any understanding of what she might care about. Or interest in it. And he was right, too. As much as I'd have liked to unwrap and eat Caspian like a Godiva carré, it would have been a shitty thing to prioritize on Ellery's birthday. I don't think she'd be massively happy if you didn't show up either.
"On the contrary, I think she'd be quite pleased."
Had he even been in the same argument I'd witnessed yesterday? I made a whinging noise, wanting to protest, but also not wanting to start another fight with him about something we'd never agree on.
"Are you sure about tonight?"
The question was casual enough, but his eyes were so intent on mine he might as well have been saying, "Are you sure about me?" "Yes, definitely." Holding my hand tight to his chest, Caspian bestowed another of his fleeting kisses upon my nose, and then let me go.
"Then come on. Fashionably late is one thing. Late is quite another."
We travelled mostly in silence,
The car took us right into the heart of Kensington, past on-site security and into a leafy boulevard, literally behind Kensington Palace itself. A street of private mansions, delicately illuminated by Narnia lampposts and patrolled by armed guards. It was hard to process, really, the existence of a place like this right in the middle of England's capital, where the land values were unthinkable. Even One Hyde Park, with all its aggressive opulence, had been obliged to build upward. Not these languorous three-story homes with their wings and gardens and stable blocks. There was a quietness of conviction here, an unshakable expectation of wealth and its advantages that was, frankly, kind of scary. How did you get the balls to own a place like this? To believe you deserved it? The houses themselves, though, were just a little bit incongruous. The ornate stucco frontages, all pillars and porticos and wedding cake moulding, struck me as something I'd have expected to find in a Henry James novel. Status symbols of people called Vanderbilt. Not English old money. The car drew to a halt in front of one of the mansions and I scrambled out, feeling dazed and floaty. Caspian, of course, strode straight through the swung-wide gates, past the fountain, the motherfucking fountain, and up the steps to the house, which was lit up and shining like a medieval vision of heaven. Or the Disney castle if it had been a touch more Rothschild. Even in the moments I wasted dithering, a second car pulled up, another black Maybach, and disgorged a small collection of glamorous people, all of them masked, the men aloof and interchangeable in black tie, the women aloof and marginally less interchangeable in their designer frocks. Laughing, their voices entangling, they glided past me. And I realized that if I didn't catch up sharpish, I was going to lose Caspian in the flow of the fabulously dressed. I scampered after him, clearly starting the evening as I meant to go on, looking like an idiot, and caught up just inside the entrance hall, somehow managing not to go arse up, face down on the highly polished marble floor. Holy fuck. That house. I mean, yes, it had an entrance hall, for starters. It was that sort of place. Full of stately rooms that didn't seem to be for anything. At least nothing that normal people did, like watch TV or wander around absentmindedly while chain-eating Pringles. It was all ornate plasterwork and inlaid panels, curlicues and chandeliers. Those really tall vase things that did nothing except proclaim that your house, and wallet, were big enough to accommodate them. It all left me slightly dizzy. Too much light glinting on too many surfaces. And the inescapable truth that the only circumstances in which people like me were expected to visit places like this was with a National Trust membership card. And Caspian had grown up here. This was his. Shit. I was having a Pemberley moment. I looked around desperately for Ellery, but unless she was wearing a particularly distinctive and Ellery-ish mask, or a name badge maybe, I had no way of recognizing her among the guests. It wasn't a horrible crush or anything. People sort of spilled very naturally through the spacious rooms, and the atmosphere was at once lively and refined. Dear God, I wasn't a Jane Austen novel. But there was no getting away from the fact I blithely turned up at a gathering where I didn't know a fucking soul. And where the whole point of the evening was making basic interaction as difficult and obtuse as possible. Suddenly, Caspian, who I guess hadn't abandoned me after all, seized my hand. I hadn't expected him to get all PDAE, and I would have been gratified, except he was holding me so tightly that I felt my bones creak in protest. A man and a woman had disengaged themselves from another couple and were now coming toward us. She was just lovely.
this willowy honey and roses beauty and an ageless English elegance. Everything about her exquisitely simple, from the smooth caramel twist of her hair to the midnight blue folds of her gown. Her mask was a swirl of silver filigree over navy brocade. Impossible in the presence of such grace not to be self-conscious about my off-the-rack tux and my visit to the MAC makeup counter. I swallowed, trying not to succumb to profound despair. Attendee commits seppuku at high society event.
Caspian. She leaned in to kiss his cheek. I'm so glad to see you.
Her voice was familiar. Its rhythms and intonations, that hint of a fanny ardent purr. He gave a tight little nod.
Mother.
Oh, wow. I suppose I should have figured that out. I probably had. But from the whole art auction thing and the way Caspian and Ellery talked about her, I convinced myself that Mrs. Hart would be a grim and heinous witch. Not a woman whose smile cut a deep dimple into her cheeks and made her eyes crease at the corners. She was smiling that very beautiful, very real smile at me now.
And you must be Arden.
Yeah. I replied, suavely.
And this our life, exempt from public haunt, finds tongues in trees, books in the running brooks, sermons in stones, and good in everything.
My mum loved those lines. I could remember her whispering them to me, holding me tight on the nights when, I realized with hindsight, she was waiting fearfully for my father to come home. I nodded helplessly. It was either that or burst into tears, vomit my life story onto Mrs. Hart's Jimmy Choo's. Weirdly, I almost wanted to. For some reason, part of me was convinced she'd be really super nice about it. Her golden hazel eyes were so full of warmth.
Arden.
Caspian's voice sliced the silence.
This is my mother, Gertrude Hart.
Please call me Trudy.
Okay. Fuck. Worst guest ever. It wasn't so much a sense of movement, but a sense of stillness that reminded me she wasn't alone. Weird, because the man at her shoulder wasn't normally the type of person you wouldn't notice. He was impressively tall and impressively attractive, in a steely corporate kind of way. Not entirely dissimilar to Caspian. Except older and sort of more, somehow. His mask was very plain, one side ungleaming black, the other a deep, heavy grey, almost the same shade as his eyes. It was a testament to just how much I was Caspian's that, apart from a mild and largely curious stirring of my libido, I wasn't that into him.
It's been a long time, Caspian.
He spoke much as he presented himself, with an air of cold command.
Won't you introduce me to your friend?
Caspian's hand was sweating in mine.
Of course. Arden, this is Lancaster Stane. He was my father's business partner.
Stane had barely glanced at me, which I discovered I was actually pretty glad about. He was fashioned to hit all my yes-please buttons, but the sexy-to-scary ratio was a little too far towards scary for my comfort. Of course, I was into discomfort, too, but I knew my own limits. I might fantasize sometimes about men like Lancaster Stane doing terrible things to me, but I didn't want him to actually do them.
Arthur always hoped you'd follow in his footsteps,
he was saying.
But I knew better.
There was a pause, and it felt full of thorns.
Why are you here? Caspian asked after a moment. Ellery invited me. So, of course, I came. Stane smiled. A perfectly normal smile, easy, affectionate, and urbane. It's been a welcome opportunity to renew acquaintance with your family. I was always very fond of you. Maybe I was imagining things, but Caspian seemed flustered somehow.
I'm surprised she still remembers you. It's been a long time. She's very loyal. She feels both friendships and betrayal, perhaps, too keenly.
But another smile.
Who would know that better than you? You are her brother, after all.
A terrible shudder ran through Caspian's whole body. I wasn't sure it was visible, but God, I felt it. Something was very wrong here, and I didn't know what it was or how to help. All I could do was hold Caspian's hand and hope it could be enough when it so clearly wasn't. His silence had taken on this odd, almost defeated quality. I'd never known him lost for words before, and it frightened me. And that was when Nathaniel turned up. I wasn't sure how I recognized him because I'd never seen him in the flesh before. But somehow, even with the top half of his face covered by a golden mask, I did. Maybe it was the rich copper of his hair or the expensive whiskey sheen of his eyes. The kissable lips. The sculpted jaw of a curse-breaking fairy tale hero. Or maybe it was the familiar possessive way he put his arm around Caspian's waist, and the way Caspian didn't flinch or pull away. I'd seen them standing like that in photographs. Friends. Lovers. Partners. Everything I still wasn't quite.
"Oh, here you are,"
he said.
"Can you come a moment, my prince? There's been a cock-up with the caterers."
It was a shock to hear him speak. For Nathaniel to suddenly become real to me in a way he'd never had before, when he'd been safely contained in pictures and in the past. In Caspian's assurances that it was me he wanted. Me who understood him, me who made him happy. But it was hard to remember that when Nathaniel touched him so easily. Called him by a name that belongs to a life they'd shared. Caspian glanced at him, his eyes too bright and desperate.
"Of course."
He pulled his hand from mine, murmured something vague about being back soon, excused himself politely to the others, and then disappeared into the sea of formal wear with Nathaniel. Lancaster Stein watched him go. I had no idea what he was thinking. Or, for that matter, what had happened. Only that I felt horribly dislocated. Caspian had brought me with him into this world. His world. And hadn't even thought to prepare me for it. He just let me blunder into things clueless and confused and blind. Which would have been, well, not fine, but typical. I'd have coped. Except he needed me. He needed me, but he hadn't given me the power to help him. He hadn't trusted me enough. Or believed I could. And so it had fallen to Nathaniel. I couldn't resent him for rescuing Caspian. But it hurt that it had been someone else. That I hadn't been able to protect my man. I suddenly realized Lancaster was departing as well. Apparently he'd seen a Viscount he needed to talk to. And then everyone was gone, and I was alone with Mrs. Hart. Chapter 26. I mustered a pathetic smile, tried to think of something to say to her. Thankfully, she was on the case, smiling at me as if this wasn't potentially excruciating.
"It's so lovely to meet you at last," Caspian has told me almost nothing about you.
I should have been all out of hurt for one evening, but apparently I wasn't. Though